Happy holidays. Let's get that in there, get that in there and out of the way, into the way. Previous years have done a fun drive, which has been fun. Maybe the actual some funds were got from it, but basically it's for fun, you know. So this year, more like a rambling rant. I was getting out of the shower this morning and I putting on my new underwear. I like my underwear, man. I admit it. And I don't normally shop at Walmart. Sometimes I actually spend some bucks for underwear, but this time I wanted to save some bucks, so that's why I went to Walmart. And they actually have really nice a nice kind. There's something about the fit, but on the label I'm noticing, and this is made by Jockey, and I'm noticing part of the label is life. And my first thought is like, how the heck can you put the word life on a pair of underwear? I mean, it sounds ridiculous. And the fact that that can be branding, like no words are sacred anymore. And it becomes a commodifying thing. See that in a lot of products, especially perfumes on TV, Obsession and all these. It's like the, you know, sound bite advertising, whatever you call it, pre-Twitter. But then there's some truth to it, you know, because when I think of in the Kabbalah, in the Hebrew, there's a sort of a flavor of God that's called Shaddai Elchaim, and basically means the Elchaim part means the life. So and that corresponds to the second chakra. So the life on the underwear kind of fits, you know. It does. It fits. So on the one hand, I can see the truth in it, and then on the other hand, I can, so to speak, on the other hand, you know, I can see the cultural commodification, misappropriation, whatever you call it. So it's kind of like we, how do we deal with this? I mean, we're. There's so much of this in the culture, in the mainstream. There's so much of this that it's, I don't know if it's how natives feel about being colonialized. That's the heat coming on, the background noise. I don't know if that's the same as that kind of colonialized thing, but it's a form of sort of having to live with and navigate these kind of daily, the daily dualities, let's call them, sort of, you know, seeing things from multiple angles, because it's hard to escape, or nearly impossible, or perhaps impossible, to escape a product, a thing that is purchased, a daily commodity, which are, you know, in many cases useful, and somebody put work and time into it, and perhaps is putting their proverbial kids through proverbial college with it. So it's not to put down the Walmart underwear, but just to say that it's an example of this multi-layered thing. And now I notice this going to the stores. It's like my sense in the couple weeks before the Christmas and with the rush and the extra people, more people shopping, it's like, I wonder where the spirit is, because the sense is that, I mean, maybe it's normal shopping thing, but people are at the market and they kind of have this energy that's like their eye on the prize. Like, I'm gonna get the thing. I'm gonna get those things, and then I can go home and kick back. You know, some people are cheery, some people are chatting, but generally, it's kind of a frantic, frenetic energy. And there's like that eye on the prize thing, which, again, there's a nicety in recognizing people and giving a nice gift. You know, I do some of that too, but it seems to be at the expense, no pun intended, at the expense of, let's talk about the solstice and the sunlight, at the expense of the sun and what the solstice means and how that shines in all of us. And where is the discussion about that? Where is the energy on that? Where is the pause, the smile that connects people with that? You know, to what percentage is that compared with this eye on the prize kind of thing? So there, again, is my view of what the sort of holiday energy conundrum of our consciousness as a people. And that's all going to tie in with, you know, how we, where our products come from, how the workers are treated. Are they slave labor? Is it destructive to Mother Earth and the land, air, and water? Or is it sustainable, renewable? So that's a whole other discussion there. And then the other thing I want to mention is the holiday rush, because that's part of the energy too. Now, this could be looked at a couple of ways. Come to mind is the rush. You know, it's a high, it's a rush. There's a rush to get, you know, there is a rush. Like you have a shot of liquor or something, it's a rush. Or you get home and you're cold and you make that hot chocolate, it's a rush. So there's a high, there's a rush to it. But again, how is that in perspective to this, the shortest, darkest days of the year? Where nature is basically, to me, saying, slow down, contemplate, be introspective, kind of embrace or work with this quote darkness and this slowing down before the energy starts to pick up again on the solar cycle. So there's a kind of again, these sort of contrasting energies that however one deals with them could make or break your holiday mood, your holiday spirit. There's also, you know, a lot of people get depressed. Some people get nostalgic. It brings up memories. That's a whole kind of exercise in having to deal with the past memories that come up. And you know, can be positive, can be negative, whatever. So there's a mix there. And then, so, you know, however, but we're, I guess as a culture, we're more sort of culturally aware. We make a point to say, you know, rarely happy solstice, but happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Kwanzaa, New Year. But still, there's that lack of connection and energy connection with nature and you know, where all this stuff comes from. Mother Earth and all the elements and the workers that help produce all that. So that's my little holiday reflection. I don't know that it fits the category of the unified duality, or the Andean Yanantin, which is to hold two opposite things in the mind at the same time, and kind of sort of in the tradition of the Zen koan or the Taoist philosophy, to kind of hold those opposites and work with them, or see, you know, instead of just immediately labeling them or trying to qualify or judge them, just kind of just be with it and see what that does. Now, I don't know that fits the yin-yang. I don't really think so. I think it's more the product, the kind of product that we have to deal with in this culture, in the world, where virtually everything has a label and a commodification to it, so that it's an ongoing effort to kind of put things in their place and stay unified and in tune with what is beyond all that. A while ago in a calendar, actually, speaking of the new year coming up, speaking of the new year, might as well do the promos here. The 2018 Haiku calendar is available, over 50 artists, photos, artwork, poems every month, all kinds of holidays, interesting things, respecting many traditions as I can think of or learn about. So that's available. And then my Haiku book, Haiku One Breaths, A Voice Through a Tangle. That's half how to write haiku and half anthology. With a lot of poets in there. And the combination, there's all these are available on the website, allbook-books.com. If you got my email, you know. My new book, Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, book form, and now available in PDF. Basically, minus the cost of the paper. And what else? Another haiku book by Nagas Rothermel. Side Roads, Garden Journal of Haiku, and prayers for her as she's healing from shoulder surgery. I think maybe shoulder replacement. So get well soon, Nagas. And what else? Yeah, the news service that goes out pretty much every day, about 10 links to news around the world and interesting videos. I mean, you know, talk about net neutrality is important, but a lot of news is already biased. And that's a whole show there. And I want to get to this this book that I read a while ago. I'd seen in this page a day calendar, there was a little, I would call it a haiku. It's like a short, maybe it's a short saying, but it's from a Korean guy named Taego, T-A-E-G-O, which, if I recall, yes, it means great ancient. So that's probably not maybe his actual name, but also like one of those sort of names that signifies, you know, something like Lao Tzu as old boy or old lion. It's like you don't know whether it's an actual person or not. But anyway, this is reportedly an actual person. The book is translated with commentary by J.C. Cleary, a Buddha from Korea, the Zen teachings of Taego. And I, what got me to the book was reading this haiku, which kind of blew my mind for a haiku. So I'll read it now. I'll read it twice. The solid doors shatter. Clear wind blows through from beginningless time. The solid doors shatter. Clear wind blows through from beginningless time. So that's kind of a Zen koan in itself. Whatever the doors mean to you, and just I like that it gets in touch with that just that clear wind blowing from the timeless place, that eternal place, whatever you call it. That brings me to that center point again, that how I think of the solstice and the true energies of this season, along with the fanfare and the gift giving and all the hoopla. There's sort of a balancing of these, the frugal and the sparse and the beginning of that emptiness of winter, the empty, less things, you know, less living things growing on the patio in the garden. And you know, we're not looking around at stuff as much. We're more sort of inward. So that haiku helps. And it's an excellent book. This book, it's one of those books that has helped me and continues to with my personal journey. At times when I was going through stuff and just, you know, felt like uncharted territory, and to read about a book, of a guy on a path in the 14th century giving advice and stuff. And I'll read just a little bit of this, a few quotes in here, maybe help you through the holiday season if you need it. The end of arising and disappearing is called stillness. The end of arising and disappearing is called stillness. To be in the midst of stillness without the meditation saying is called indeterminacy. To be mindful of the meditation saying amidst the stillness is called spiritual awareness. This empty and still spiritual awareness is indestructible and uncontaminated. If you can work like this at the Buddhist path, success will come. Your body and mind and the meditation will become fused into one whole. You have no dependencies and your mind is not headed anywhere. At this time, there will only be you. If you think thoughts of otherness, then you are sure to be deluded by the reflections. I like that. I'm not reading it as a selfish, the only be of you as selfish thought, but that, just that, you know, the minute, the second you start to think of and other is kind of like what Issa calls deluded by the reflections. It's like it can, not that there's a place for that, but in this sense that it takes away from the oneness. Perhaps there is not a place for it. I'm not sure. I'd have to think that through. I mean, it happens, but there's a the minute one is thinking of other or comparing, there's a kind of a break from the oneness or the wholeness. Okay, so going on here, it says, constantly check out the meditation saying, go for days and days without a break. If you can go by the Dharma for 3 days without a break, with motion and stillness, speech and silence, as one suchness, and the meditation saying constantly appearing before you, this is still like moonlight on the bank of a swift stream. You touch it, but it doesn't disperse. You push it, but it doesn't go away. You sweep it away, but it isn't lost. Being awake and being asleep are one suchness. The time of great enlightenment is near. When you reach this juncture, do not seek rationalizations from people and do not talk with idlers. Just be like an ignorant mute 24 hours a day, whether walking, sitting, standing, or lying down. Abandon body and mind. Be like a dead person. Don't let the inside out and don't let the outside in. To forget the meditation saying here would be a great mistake. Before the great doubt is shattered, do not by any means forget the meditation saying. If you do just as I say and really reach this stage, then suddenly ignorance will shatter and you will empty through in great enlightenment. After you are enlightened, you must see a legitimate expert of the Zen school to make the final selections for you and lead you to the ultimate. If people at this stage do not see a teacher 10 times out of 10, they will become demons. I send my prayers. So that's quite an interesting look at the Zen, some of the Zen tradition, and, you know, objectively you think, well, hey, reached enlightenment, hey. And meanwhile, the Zen school was saying, then, even after reaching enlightenment, you have to go see an expert. So that's part of the humblingness of light enlightenment as reported in this Zen tradition, and ties in with the haiku about the shattering, what the solid doors might mean. Ignorance will shatter. When I hear the solid doors, I think of that as the barriers and what close, you know, because doors open and close, and it keeps it keeps us from the clear wind blowing through. The solid doors shatter, clear wind blows through from beginning this time. So, wow, thanks for coming along on this little rambly ride. And I told a friend a story about how I gave a few beers to the local mechanics, some wine, and one guy I gave the beer to, and he gave me a hug, and it was a total surprise, you know, kind of stereotype, archetype of the rugged mechanic, and the guy was so touched he gave me a hug. My friend said, instead of I'll be home for Christmas, I'll be hugged for Christmas, and I thought that's really a nice thing, a nice affirmation, a nice whatever that, you know, may your holidays of whatever shape and form, or non-holidays as you choose, be filled with hugs and pleasantry, connection, and good body, mind, and spirit. So thanks for listening, and be well, and have a good one, and Happy New Year coming up.